Serve It Cold, Episode 6. Written by Ronnie Blackwell, presented by Dancing Cat Studios. Rockin' the Cradle. Sonny Rashad speaking. Well, hey there, Steve. What's the good news from the quarter? Margaritaville wash away yet in all this rain? Johnny Speed, huh? Uh-huh. Checking up on me, I see. Well, hope you gave me a good report. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right. His money's no good. Goat's got him down there in New Orleans looking for Narlene Moore, his younger sister. You want to watch out for that one. Is she ever a handful? Right. Well, you know, I don't bend that way, Steve, but yeah, I'd say she was a looker. Yeah, Johnny checked in with Goat about an hour ago. No surprise he passed your way. I have a passing acquaintance with one of them polecats what has her. Jerry Joachim. He used to live down on Governor Nichols. Yeah, and the other one goes by Raginet. Rayford Raphael Raginet. Trust me, you do not want to run afoul of that pair on a dark night. Let's just say I've got technicolor ribs and leave it at that. Yeah, yeah. So he knows his coffee. He what? With who? Well, why the hell didn't you tell me up front? You sorry? Damn, that was fast work. Where'd he find her? The French Market? Well, of all the places, right out in public. She okay? Well, that's more of a relief than you can know. Where are they staying? Yeah, I heard of the Tommies. Are they good people? I've been wondering about that.
A big smile gradually bloomed on her face. She started laughing and laughed for a long time, her posture relaxing with her laughter, laughing in relief rather than at my little bar trick. I decided it might be time to push a little. Okay, Narlene, why don't you start with Saturday night at the Silver Dollar? She nodded her head. Jerry Joachim gave you a half pound of pot to hold for him. She looked startled.
Ray. It was Ray.
Why you?
I had the biggest purse.
They were afraid that the cops were onto him?
Yeah, we were hanging at that little park next to the bar, and Jerry's telling us how they've got this great pot and how it's worth thousands and thousands of dollars, and they're the only ones who got it in the whole Southeast. And they're going to be like real big stuff, so some of the guys start making fun of them. You know, dissing them a little. So Ray goes to the car and brings this whole big bag of it. Man, they were telling true. This is the strongest shit I ever smoked. So we're sitting around smoking and a cop car comes by. It wasn't even on our side of the street or anything, but Ray gets all hyper paranoid about it. Says they'll stop him because he has Louisiana plates and all. He goes off on Jerry for talking about the pot like it's Jerry's fault that Ray decides to bring the whole damn bag to show off. I mean, Ray's just some kind of psycho or something. So he just shoves it in my purse. Says he'll get it tomorrow, you know? Didn't ask. Ray don't ask for nothing. He takes what he wants. Bastard saying that all the time.
She was silent for a while, staring at an unseen horizon. I prompted her. So, you get up the next morning, come on down to the mini-mart, and leave your purse in the store. How did you do that? I didn't even see you come in that morning. She gave a quick smile.
You had your head buried in that little computer of yours reading about coffee, Johnny C. Nah, I think I was still stoned Sunday morning. It was like swimming in thick water, you know? I completely forgot about the pot. I rode to the mini-mart with Sue from next door so I could pick up my car from the cradle. I was not in a walking Sunday at all. She had to buy a pair of the hose for church. I came in and was just there. Didn't want nothing to eat or drink. Nothing. So, we go home, and I'm trying to get dressed for church, and Mama's wanting to know where all we went last night and all. So my cell rings, and it's Ray, saying, "Where's my weed, little girl?" And I know as soon as he says it that my purse is back at the mini-mart. So I tell him I gotta go to church, and I'll see him later, and he goes off on me, cussing and screaming like the psycho he is. So I cut off the phone, jump in the car, and head back to the mini-mart, where I proceeded to show my butt to the whole neighborhood. I'm really sorry about that, Johnny C.
I shook my head. I've been called worse. Nothing hurt but my pride, and I'm sure it'll grow back. So why didn't you show up for church?
I went back home, you know, to look for the pot. I really couldn't remember getting home the night before. I barely remembered when my car was parked, you know? So I look under the bed, look in the trash can. I mean, I just had to find it. Mama had already gone on to church. After I turn the house upside down looking for it, I start to run out and hurry on to church. And here's Jerry and Ray sitting in this old Bonneville right there in the front yard. I should have run back in and called the cops right then, but I just got into the car with them like an idiot.
But you did call the cops at some time.
Oh, that.
She shook her head.
I'm sorry about that. I called that tip hotline even before I left your parking lot. Guess I was a little mad at you.
I never would have noticed. Okay, so you go with these guys. You tell them you lost their pot. They take turns yelling at you. You all maybe smoke some more pot, because I'm sure they had some stashed somewhere else in town. They probably try to follow me around town, maybe follow Bebop, maybe follow Homer. While I'm talking, Narlene's head is nodding up and down in agreement.
Yeah, once they quit yelling at me, I was right up in it with them. We're riding all over Catherine, smoking dope and eating Pringles. They got this case of pizza-flavored Pringles, me sitting there in my church clothes. Well, anyway, we couldn't find you, or nobody else but Bebop, who was right where he always is 24/7. And then we see you walking out of the woods and go to the cradle. We figure Sonny told on me, and you and Goat somehow worked together to steal the pot so I wouldn't get into trouble. You know, like teach me a lesson or something. So we decide that I would call home when Mama's at night church and say that I'm going to New Orleans for a couple of days. Then Ray will call up Goat and say, you know, like, threaten to hurt me or something if Goat doesn't give the pot back. I know, damned stupid idea. But we were all the big geniuses when we were making this shit up. So I do my call, and then they drop me by the house to get some clothes. And, you know, I'm standing there in the house, still stoned as hell, but I'm saying to myself, just call Goat. Just get out now. I mean, I was just there all alone, but I didn't. I was already a fool to the whole church, the whole town, the school. You know, I quit basketball, and now they're going to say it's because I'm hooked on drugs and stuff. I don't know why, but I just couldn't get off the bus, you know? So I wait and wait, and just about the time I'm thinking Mama's going to come home from church, and that'll be that, here they come, tearing up the street. I get in the car, and we take off. And all of a sudden, I realize that they're both just covered with blood. And Ray is all pumped and jazzed and saying how we can relax because they done got our pot back. And Jerry's all quiet and not talking, so I think he's hurt. And Ray's just talking up a storm, saying they're not hurt, it's the other guy's blood. He should have known not to mess with their shit. I ask him whose blood. And Ray spins some yarn about a junkie followed them from down here in New Orleans and stole the pot from my purse. But I know he's lying because Jerry's just being quiet and maybe crying sometimes. I say how if they got the pot back, just let me out and they can go on their way. Ray's all saying no. We all in trouble if we stop now. I pull out my phone, but Ray hears it turn on, I guess. He just reaches back, grabs it, and throws it out the window. We come on down here to this ratty apartment Jerry's got down here. I get in that filthy place and I see there's one bedroom and one bed. While Ray's parking the car, I get Jerry. he's still not talking or nothing, and he looks afraid of the blood on him when we get in the lights. Anyway, I get Jerry down and look him in the eyes and tell him the bedroom's mine, and if either one of them fuckers comes in on me, I'll cut him stem to stern. Mama's the one taught me that, stem to stern, and that the next blood they see will be theirs this time. So I lock the door, put a chair under the door handle, pull the bed up against the chair, and go to sleep. Next morning, they are still sitting around with blood all over them, and now they've been smoking crank all night, and they won't talk at all when I'm in the room. They just sit there, all sullen. I tell them they've got to wash up and change before they get arrested, and they start stirring a little. As soon as Ray gets in the shower, I walk to the door and tell Jerry I'm going for a walk and just leave. I figure he won't follow me with the blood on him, and he doesn't. So I'm out of there, but I can't decide what to do. You know, I still didn't know if I was really in trouble or not. I mean, they're both assholes, so what's new? I got out of the apartment without my purse. I don't have any money to get anything to eat, so I just walk to the French Market. And Ray finds me less than 30 minutes later. I can tell he's pissed at me, so I won't let him get me alone. I make him shop with me for a couple of hours, making him talk to me. Trying to make him laugh, you know. Not that it did much good.
You saw this kid from Sunrise there.
Yeah, Ben Rome. He said he was here every day this week selling peanuts. I was going to give him a note to take home if I couldn't get in touch with Goat today. Or maybe even ride home with him.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Let's go back to yesterday. What happened after the French Market?
Nothing. A whole lot of it. They sat around smoking crank all day. They would whisper at one another for a while, and then they'd yell at each other. They tried to get me to smoke crank with them. They tried to get me to smoke some more pot. They even offered me some pills of some kind, but yesterday I was staying away from everything, even beer. I even drank this nasty tap water down here trying to get straight, and I'm eating every Pringle in the place. That's all they got, and they're not eating anything because they're speeding. Dark comes, and they still won't go out, and they're sure not letting me go. I find out they've taken all my money, driver's license, credit cards, the whole works. I pitch a fit, and Ray says real calm-like, not to worry, we're partners now. Partners in what? I tell them they got their pot back, I just want to go home. Ray says he's got to do a job tomorrow, meaning today, and then we'll talk about it. So I get up, stomp off to bed. But this time, I sit in that chair and listen. Sure enough, they start yelling at each other as soon as I turn off the light. First thing I hear is that this job is very important and it will change everything. And the job is up in Catherine. That's what they were doing here in the first place, looking the place over. So, Jerry's wanting to let me go, but Ray says that they can't have me run crying to the cops in Catherine till the job's finished. Johnny C., I think Ray is going to rob a bank or something, and he's going to do it today. And then they started yelling about Ray trying to kill Sonny, and then I know whose blood that was on them. That did it. I knew I had to get out right there. And then to cap it all off, Ray starts talking about taking some of my clothes to hide somewhere in Catherine, and I realize they are still planning to try to pull some kind of shit with Goat. I see what kind of partner I am now. I doze on and off in the chair when they're not loud enough to hear. But they basically yelled at each other all night. It's already up in the morning when I hear the front door slam. I wait a few minutes and go out, and there's Jerry, just staring back at me. I come and ask him if he'd smoke a joint with me. Well, that perked him right up a bit, and he rolls a big joint and we pass it back and forth. But I'm just playing, and he's sucking this whole thing in. He's cranking for 2 nights now, and he just grinds to a halt about halfway through this joint. I say, why don't we go lie down in the bed for a while? And he's liking that idea. He's staggering around trying to pull his pants off over his shoes, so I sort of guide him into the bedroom. I get him in the bed, pull his shoes off, and he's snoring already. I slap him a couple times to see how out of it he is, and all he does is open his eyes and smile at me before he's out again. I look all over the apartment for my stuff, and I can't find anything. Travel bag, clothes, purse, nothing. You know, that made me real mad. I was mad at myself for being a fool, and for not just slapping the shit out of those two when I had the chance. But I finally decided it was them that I was really mad at. So I gather up the piles of dirty clothes, and there was nothing but dirty clothes in that place. So I gather up all the clothes up and throw them off the balcony into the courtyard. Not their courtyard, but the one next door. Then I get all the shoes, throw them over. Then I pull the grungy jeans off Jerry and throw them over. With tossing all the clothes, by this time I knew that they didn't own a pair of jockey shorts between them, but I didn't faint or nothing by what I saw. In fact, last thing I did, Johnny C., was find a big butcher knife in the kitchen and bury it to the hilt in the bed right next to Jerry's balls. I would have poured ketchup all over it for the full Bobbitt effect. Those bastards didn't even have a bottle of ketchup in the place.
Ouch. Now, Narlene, you're not still mad at me, are you?
No, Johnny C., I'm not mad at you anymore.
Good, I was just making sure there. So you left Jerry without clothes or shoes, took off and called Goat, right?
Right.
Well, you're really damaging my ego here. I thought I was rescuing a damsel in distress. Looks like Jerry's the one that might need rescuing. Okay, let's talk about what we're going to do next. We can sit right here, and Goat can be here in less than 2 hours and get you home. I can't go right now because I'm down here on another job. But if you want to chill and sort of decompress from this whole thing, I can take you to a nice, clean apartment where you'll be safe, and you can hang out while I do my work. As I talked, her face had clouded back up.
I don't really want to go home yet, if you don't mind, Johnny C.
Great. I think I can learn a lot from hanging around someone as devious as you. Now, we need to make some phone calls. Did you tell Goat that they got your credit card?
Yes. He said he would cancel it right away.
Good. Let's start with the Catherine police. I dialed the police department dispatch and asked Marianne to have Butch give me a call at my cell phone. While waiting for Butch to call, I had Narlene write down a description of the car they brought her down in. Butch called back within a couple of minutes.
BD, I told you not to call me at work. You're just making Eaton jealous.
Tell him I was just calling to get your coffee order. Listen, Butch, there's going to be an anonymous tip called into your tip line in a few minutes. I thought you might want to get a head start on the tip. Maybe try to see that it doesn't get put off till tomorrow.
Okay, shoot.
Rayford Raphael Ragonet. No, I can't spell it. From Louisiana, below Venice. I imagine he's been in the system. He's driving a Pontiac Bonneville, about 10 years old, faded green, rust on the fenders, partial Louisiana license plate 241 at the tail end of the number. The tip will be that Mr. Ragonet is in Catherine to steal a large amount of money. Maybe a bank. Sorry, I don't know more. But he also should be a suspect in the beating of Sonny Richard Sunday night. That's it. And don't bother hunting me down today. I'm out of town. And yes, I'll check in with you when I get back. Bye. I hung up. I handed the phone to Narlene. Okay, you make the tip line call. Include a general description of Ray, then call Goat. Talk to him as long as you want. If you change your mind about going home, that's okay too. Call anybody else you want to talk to. I'll be right over there by the register talking to Steve. Just come on over when you're ready to go, okay? He nodded and I left her to her calls. Steve saw me coming.
No more bets today. I should have known better than to mess with a professional swindler.
Relax, Steve. I won't hurt you any more today. Let me have the tap, man. I'm on the meter today.
Goat Johnson's meter?
No, I'm just trying to help Goat out. I'm down here on what we professional private dicks delicately call domestic work.
You mean getting paid for scratching that voyeurism itch of yours? If you'd tell me how you did that trick, it'd be worth the tab.
I'm shocked at you, Steve. You know the Bar Trick Association would drum me out of the Brotherhood if I did that. Come on. Let my guy pay for it. It'll be the best money he's going to spend this week.
Truth is, Jonathan, I'm under strict orders from Goat not to take any of your money to start with. And like you say, I try not to argue with the man.
Goat called.
Hell, he's called 3 times since you've been here. Everything's going to be all right there?
Yeah, she's a tough girl. One more day and those 2 guys would have been ready to pay Goat to take her back. Steve and I swapped new lies about old friends. Until Narlene walked up, tear-streaked, but smiling.
Goat says it's all right for me to stay if it's all right with you.
Great. Well, we need to get moving then. Sleeping ugly is not going to sleep forever. When he finally does wake up, I expect he's going to be pissed. Let's get you off the street before that happens. We've got a bit of shopping to do on the way, too. As I was leaving, I called back over my shoulder. Thanks, Steve. Oh, yeah. I checked out the new website. It looks great. Our first stop was Progress Grocery. While I picked through the bins and jars fulfilling Vera's shopping list, the brothers Perrone took turns showing Narlene exotic food treasures of the Mediterranean. We finished by ordering two of Ernie's muffalettas as backup food for the next couple of days. We ducked up the short street of Madison to bypass the Jackson Square crowd. I crossed to the sidewalk and Narlene lagged behind just a bit. Her long legs made up the ground quickly, and when she caught up, she asked,
"What are you doing?"
"What do you mean?"
"All this suddenly crossing the street. Every time you do it, I think you've seen something or somebody, and it scares the hell out of me."
I laughed and came to a halt. "Sorry, I wasn't really thinking. It's how the residents walk in the quarter. You see, every street in the quarter is one way, except for Decatur. But almost all of these streets actually have room for two wide lanes, one for driving and one for parking. Residents walk across the street from the parked cars, especially at night, so the muggers can't jump out from between the cars at you."
"You're kidding me."
"No, it's just a natural fact that although the serious crime rate in the quarter is very low, there are purse snatchers, pickpockets, con artists, and muggers that come to work every day here in the quarter just like the waiters and the bartenders. Plus, you've got people leaving their dogs in their cars that bark at you, people sleeping in their cars, other people bedded down on the sidewalk up against cars, people crouched down between cars smoking a joint, or even pissing in the street. After a while, you just realize that it's easier to get down street if you walk away from the cars." We jogged over to St. Anne and the holy grail of southeastern spice shops. Coffee, tea, or. Don was sitting behind the register flipping through the mail. He looked up at the sound of the bell and literally threw his handful of mail into the air.
"Well, as I live and breathe, miracles still happen. Reed, I thought you had been bound by a spell to that little Mississippi town. What on earth are you doing down here in civilization?"
I know it's been a long time. Don, this is a friend of mine, Narlene Moore."
"Narlene, I'm pleased to meet you. I'm sorry you have such a worthless and unfaithful friend as Creed here. Speaking of faithfulness, where is Vera? I know that she didn't give you a divorce. Have you killed the poor girl, Creed?"
"Well, somebody had to stay in Catherine and work, get the money to pay your outlandish prices, Don. But if you had bothered to check your email more often, you wouldn't be so surprised to see me. Vera said she sent you a message last night."
"I ever bothered that wretched email? I wouldn't admit it to the likes of you."
He smiled and reached under the counter and brought out a bag full of the spices and herbs that Vera had ordered.
"I suppose that you're still roasting your own coffee these days. It wouldn't stoop to buying my old stuff."
"Well, I've got to drink something while I'm here. How's the Sumatra?"
"It's good. I've got two roasts in, the usual too dark, and a lighter one that you like."
"Great. Give us a pound, whole bean. We're headed to Mick and Patty's place. Have you seen them lately?"
"They were in a couple of times this summer. But they're really too intelligent to spend much time in New Orleans in the heat, unlike us dumb old shopkeepers. I guess now they'll be swamped with school until November. You know, they really only keep the place for Mardi Gras."
"How's business these days? Looks like a good crowd in the quarter for September."
"Oh, business is just horrible. There may be a lot of tourists walking around, but it's too hot for anyone to spend money. Hell, July was so bad I shut down the place, and Rick and I went to Hawaii for 3 weeks in August. Probably saved enough on air conditioning to pay for the whole trip."
"Don, you haven't lit a cigarette since we came in. Have you quit?"
"Here's the thought. Actually, I thought about quitting, but I went to the doctor and he said that cigarettes would kill me. Well, I decided that I have so few vices left that if I stop smoking, we'll have to live in this godforsaken place forever. But I have cut way back. You know, I wouldn't want to kick off before you, Creed. It would just be so embarrassing. I don't think I could lie still through the funeral."
You have been listening to Serve It Cold by Ronnie Blackwell, starring Eric Rowe and Beth Wojcicki. Diverse parts by Roger Johnson, Mike Wynn, Martha Holloway, Paul Fisher, and Julia Holloway. Theme song, Where Is the Love by Michelle Malone. You can find out more about her and her music at www.michellemalone.com. Artwork, courtesy of Georgia Godwin and Laura Mann. Serve It Cold is a free audiobook available at dancingcatstudios.com. This and many other fine works are also available at patiobooks.com. For a print or ebook version of the book, visit ronnieblackwell.com or search for it by name at lulu.com. Dancing Cat Studios produces full cast dramatizations of novel length fiction. We'd love to hear from you. You can shoot us questions and comments by email at dancingcatstudios@gmail.com or start some wild speculation about your favorite episodes at our website, dancingcatstudios.com, or just pick up the phone and give us a call at 206-350-7613. Serve It Cold is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 U.S. license. A copy of this license is available at creativecommons.org. Ronnie would be delighted for you to share episodes of this work as often as you like with as many people as you like, provided, of course, that you give credit where credit is due, you do not charge any fee, you do not use any part of an episode to create something new, and you only copy episodes in their entirety. Some sound effects are courtesy of the Free Sound Project. Direct links and complete credits can be found at dancingcatstudios.com.